Well, in the first half, I'll give you a recap of the six-part Paul Newman, Joanne Woodward doc. Interesting. Tell you about some weekend volleyball playing. Also, Linda Hamilton. Yeah, you know her from Terminator and many other things will join us as well. First, there's Apartments.com. Apartments.com. Ever had one of those moments where you realize it's time to find a new place? At Apartments.com, they call it an out-of-apartment experience. It could be life-altering, like finding out your family is growing, or life-annoying, like dealing with a broken change machine at a laundromat. If you find yourself in an out-of-apartment experience, start your search for a new place at Apartments.com. They've helped millions of renters find their perfect place to live, and their powerful search tools helps you find a listing that checks all of your boxes. So take a moment and check out Apartments.com, the place to find a place.
One-third of all murder cases in America remain open.
He had told me that if I opened my eyes, he would slit my throat.
Each one is called a cold case.
The DNA evidence taken from the victim was a match. The linen rapist was at it again.
Based on the hit A&E television program.
A phone call is placed, one that changes a family's life forever.
Cold Case Files, the podcast.
If you could see the fire in his eyes, he screamed at me.
You want it?
Get your tape recorder out.
Get new episodes of Cold Case Files every Tuesday on Podcast One, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere you listen to podcasts.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, Linda Hamilton and Jay Moore. With Gina Grad on news and Paul Bryan on sound effects, and now, come with him if you want to live. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice. I got a mandate to get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
And Paul Bryan.
Spazzing on that ass.
Oh, boy.
All right. Lots of stuff to get into today. Let's see. I wrote some stuff down here. This weird thought as I was watching the last of the movie stars.
Paul Newman.
Yeah, Joanne Woodward. Yeah.
It's called The Last Movie Stars?
The Last Movie Stars.
I think.
Yeah. Yes. I was watching that series. Six-parter, HBO Max. Interesting. They did a whole part on Butch and Sundance. And I realized I was trying to transport myself back into that time, which is I always thought Robert Redford was this great looking dude, but I didn't think Paul Newman was a great looking dude. But then you see all the pictures of him from back in the day and you go, man, that guy was great looking. And then you go, oh, and it's mentioned all throughout, like, oh, look at this guy, looks like a Greek god, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so I was like watching it and I was going, why didn't I see that when I was 10? I don't know, Butch and Sundance, 1974, 72.
Yeah, I'll go earlier. Yeah, earlier. 72-ish.
So Redford.
No, 60. No, it's not that early.
I don't think it was in the 60s. Chris will find it, or
so
someone will find it.
Redford's like glaringly conventional hotness sort of eclipsed Paul Newman.
Well, he had a rugged good look.
69. Kind of
69. Wow.
Boom.
Released in 69, huh? Interesting.
He had a rugged good look that kind of transcended, you know, I assume age, or, you know, you could recognize that right away. It's like, oh, that's a handsome fella. He's rugged and tough.
Are we on Newman or Redford now?
Yeah. Redford, whereas Newman, I think, had more of a subtle, timeless, you know what I mean? Like you mentioned the Greek thing. Yeah,
they were both hot. I mean, you go back and look at pictures of both of them. They're both arguably two of the better looking guys in Hollywood at the time and remained. But I was looking at it, you know, they're showing parts from The Sting and parts of Butch and Sundance. And I was like, how come I never thought that guy was good looking and everyone else did?
It's a failing.
Yeah, but I was gay for
Redford. Sure,
right. And then I realized it was the time in this country's history where we were so caught up with hair. And that as a Brillo-headed kid from the valley, the long blonde hair just hanging.
Sure.
And then I start thinking, I don't know what the hairstyles were in 1872. Because
hard to say.
In movies, you can watch the Elvis 60s version of it, and that's pomade and slick back. That's a 60s haircut. And then you get to the late 60s, and you see Redford had long,
like shaggy.
Blonde, shaggy hair, which would have been fine. Today, was that from just after the Civil War? I don't know, because all I've seen is parts where, first off, the hair they had then would have been perfectly acceptable now, yeah. But it's funny, they had the sideburns going, which were kind of a 60s, 70s thing. Unclear whether guys from that era had sideburns. The mustache, always kind of ubiquitous. But I was thinking, like, I guess I need to see photographs from that era. But anyway, I realized that I dreamt, nay, longed for blonde, straight hair that I could flip back and feather and throw around. And
Leif Garretson kind of
way.
Yes, yes. That I didn't even think Newman was good looking because he had the thicker hair that was more like mine.
Right.
He had a drier kind of a mop. It was kind of the dry look. It was essentially my haircut. And my self-esteem was so low that I'm like, two of the best looking guys in the world, I'd eliminated one of them as being attractive because he had hair that was sort of like mine.
Okay, Groucho Marx.
So I was like, how could he be hot?
Right.
He's got the same hair I got.
He ever
I'm
so
not
slightly
hot.
Resembles an element of me.
Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
Now, there's a different version of that story where I decide he's the hotter one because he has hair that's kind of like mine. But that person wouldn't have been raised how I was raised.
Right.
And all I did was look at Redford's hair and marvel at it the entire time.
Which is funny because in this random still of both of them in character and not even looking at the screen, for me, Paul Newman's clearly the hotter one.
Well, they're both hot. One of them had hair that I wanted.
He has Ken doll hair. Robert Redford looks like a Ken doll.
Yes, and I'd eliminated the guy with hair that was sort of like mine. Because, like, how about if this guy lives until 1974 and he can't feather his hair? Like, what's that going to look? And it's
worthless.
You watched him in The Sting, and he had, like, the drier kind of sideburn. It just looked dry. It looked unfeatherable to me. And so I was out based on the hair.
That's interesting because when I was coming up in this world and Dirty Dancing was all the rage and I looked exactly like Jennifer Grey. I mean, I had the perm, I had the nose, I looked exactly like her. And I thought, if she can do it, maybe one day I can fool people into thinking that I'm attractive.
Really?
Yeah, I really looked to her as an inspiration.
Sorry about how that turned out.
Yeah,
but
me too.
Still inspiring.
It was at the time. A little kid doesn't know.
I had no one to look to.
Yeah.
There was no bald icons in my era.
Hey, speaking of HBO, guess what I watched, which I think Brian already saw? Oh my God, Run, Don't Walk to Woodstock 99.
I didn't. I saw the earlier one. Yeah.
Oh my God, what a literal shit show. Shit like streaming through the fucking field.
I saw it.
Did you watch it?
Yeah.
Oh, what was it? When people talk about toxic masculinity these days, like somebody called someone a bitch, I'm like, oh, honey, watch Woodstock 99 if you want to talk about toxic masculinity. This ain't it.
The other thing I'd realized as I was watching all about 6 hours of this doc, I guess it was six parts and each one was about an hour. All in, and I will get the exact time, but all in on Paul's Motorsports, less than 2 minutes. Of
6 hours?
Yes, of 360 hours or minutes or so. Way less than 5 minutes, like all in of him doing what he loved the most.
How much of him on salad dressing?
Not as much as you would think either. But it was all about acting, and Joanne was in there as well. So, you know, that's equal time. And it was enjoyable, but it really struck me that the people that made this doc about Newman didn't give two shits about car racing. Mm-hmm. So thus, it didn't really exist for them. Now, I would argue that it's not really up to you if the main character of your doc is insanely passionate about car racing and that spans decades, then you're almost
obligated.
Yeah, I was going to say it's like a fiduciary duty where you must cover it, but it was not covered. They covered so little of it, they never got into him and Letterman and running an indie team and just all of it. Like they never. I spoke to Bob Sharp. Bob Sharp here. Love calling that guy. He's in Florida now. He was in Danbury, Connecticut. He was Paul's neighbor, or at least neighbor as much as you can get in that region. He basically, Lime Rock was his home track. Newman was the guy who got hold of Bob Sharp and said, you know, I want to do some racing. And Bob's sort of a neighbor and said, we're going to make this happen. And Bob was literally with him, you know, every weekend for 15 years at the track. Bob's alive and kicking in Florida.
Nobody knocked on his door?
They had actors and publicists and writers and people you've never even heard of going back to multiple times. Bob's phone never rang.
Wow.
Now, I'll tell you the story I heard. I don't know if it counts as a rumor or not, but the version I heard was that there was a seventh installment planned, a full another hour on his racing, but they realized it was done to perfection and winning the racing time of Paul Newman. And they were like, oh, you know what? Why even bother? This has been done.
It's been done.
Everyone's seen it. They're not going to make the Dark Knight again. You know what I mean?
Good point.
Why waste our time?
They did have us credited winning the race on Paul Newman. So they just grabbed 45 seconds from our movie and just kind of
obviously aware of it.
Laid it over there. It's interesting. This is, you know, docs now are getting intellectual property from other docs.
Yeah.
Which is used to be you'd get footage from the film they were in.
The original footage.
Anyway, interesting, kind of long, deep divey, really gives you an idea of like what Hollywood kind of was back in the day and the craft and all Gore Vidal and all these names coming out of the woodwork.
Am I thinking of a different couple, or was there a little bit of scandal to Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward getting together?
He was married.
Right.
He had a few children.
So, yes.
Maybe
so,
two or three.
A little salacious.
He was, I think, with Joanne for 5 years
while
he was still married, which is...
Did they talk to the first wife?
Yep.
Oh.
Still alive.
Interesting.
I don't know if you can pull off 5 years of that now with the Ring doorbells being so ubiquitous and texting and
TMZ at every airport hangar or gate.
Yeah, I don't think one could pull that off. But they evidently, if memory serves, it was about a 5 year affair before he broke it off.
Hard feelings from the original Mrs. Newman?
You know, it was tough because there's this kind of heartbreaking story where the son Scott, who it's always sort of the ante's up in the pain because Bob Sharp had a son about the same age who was named Scott, who raced with Paul as well. And so there was a lot of like, you know, Bob Sharp going, Scott's running the car, qualifying the car, whatever. It's got to be weird to hear your son's name like over and over again right when he died. He died at 26. Paul put him in a lot of movies, put him in The Towering Inferno, put him in...
His own son or the other
yes.
son?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, no, sorry, his own son. He's not that good a guy. He put him in, before he died, obviously, he put him in The Great Waldo Pepper.
Don't remember that.
Oh, it's a good movie. It's a very good movie. I saw in the movie theaters when I was young, maybe more than once. Yeah, Brian, you know.
I was about to say, I haven't seen a ton of Paul Newman movies. I've seen the classics, you know, Butch and Sundance and Sting and all
that. The Great Waldo Pepper was a Robert Redford movie. I don't even know if Newman was in it. George Roy Hill directed. I think Redford would get people, you know, would get Newman's son. Yeah,
sure.
Anyone can do. The thing that was funny, if you can, I don't know if it's online, Chris, it might take you a minute, but they were showing a little montage of Paul's son acting in the movies. He literally just had one line a lot of the time. He was a horrible actor with the one line. The one line, there was this...
You either got it or you don't.
There, yeah, Paul was not in The Great Waldo Pepper, so I guess that's a Redford connection there. But, Brian, you should see it. Right. Good movie. Worth a watch. In The Towering Inferno, Chris... In The Towering Inferno, they showed a clip, Chris... Where they?
I hear you.
I know you're looking at Dawson. I don't know if you're sorting out something. A fireman fell down an elevator shaft on fire, and it was one of their guys, and it was Scott Newman was like the young guy.
Oh no!
And
fireman.
He did like a dear God or something, and it's like I didn't believe it. Oh. Like, it was 4 seconds.
Yeah. How'd this fucking guy get cast? Yeah.
But
some Citizen Kane shit.
And then there's all these interviews with, they show this interview of Paul Newman being interviewed on like, why did you think The Towering Inferno was an important film to do? And you could tell he's just like,
I got paid $1 million.
He just clearly didn't want to, he didn't want to be there. So he was trying to toe the company line, but you could just read it in his face. Yeah. He had no.
Some guys can't fake that shit.
They were such artists.
What are your hopes and dreams to leave this podcast studio?
Him and Joanne just wanted to do theater and like local, regional stuff. And
God, I love that man.
That's all they wanted to do. That's all she wanted to do was our town,
right.
You know, like at the Connecticut Playhouse, you know, and all of a sudden he's doing Irwin Allen, who's fresh off the Poseidon Adventure, did these big
disaster
movies. And he just did not want to be there at all. But those interviews retrospectively are funny
hilarious.
To go back and look at. But
I feel like there's an unspoken agreement amongst the interviewer doing the junket. Like, just throw the softballs. We all know what we're here for. You want clips on, at that point, I don't know, what Entertainment Tonight or whatever. You know
you're
what
not going to get the gotcha moment.
Yeah, it's just you're pitching batting practice.
All right, so we'll see if we can find that bizarre clip from online. We will also tell you that it is unseasonably hot out here, or maybe just seasonally hot.
I think it's seasonably. I got back from Chicago where it was hot.
It was very hot in Irvine, California, where it typically doesn't get as hot as it does out here in the valley, but it was a scorcher yesterday. Went to watch 19 hours of volleyball.
Indoor.
In one of these giant facilities. The giant facilities, which literally have 14 volleyball courts under one roof, all kind of going at it at once, became a sauna, but it was wet heat because there's 16-year-old girls playing volleyball vigorously every 10 feet. I mean, on every court. Then there's the parents sitting there cheering them on. And after a number of hours, it got very muggy.
No AC or the AC didn't matter?
No AC.
It's absolutely worse to be inside for those events.
100%.
You're the only AC in the building.
That's right. What they needed.
Stupid.
When I get it, they have a restaurant part or cafeteria part, which has AC. But the rest, as soon as you stepped out, it was like muggy New York City in July. It would cost, I don't know how much to air condition, how many million cubic feet that place was. So they went, we're in Irvine. We have 5 bad days a year. Suck
it
up. But I will tell you, and I'll tell you this, Brian, you may want to avail yourself of this and others listening as well, which is the whole house fan, people, the whole house fan. Now, this place was a giant facility. Like you gutted a Costco or Home Depot and just put in 18 volleyball courts. They had the front door, just two doors open, and then maybe a couple. Then they would put these big industrial fans everywhere and just blow it. Now, I don't know etiquette. You guys tell me. I'd see guys just standing in front of the fan.
Jerk offs.
Which is, so I got to get back sacked, blown all over this fucking place.
Nice for you.
Yeah, I would argue you can air yourself out for a few beats, but don't park it in front of the
fan. Yeah, you don't live there now.
That's all we got. That's all this court. There's one per court. The girls are sweating their asses off and, you know, trying their best to be hydrated over the course of 25 games. The whole house. Now, listen, there is a fan, and you can take, well, let's go through the fan fandom. You can take a fan, you can put it in your living room, and you can put it on oscillate, which I never understood because I'm on the sofa watching TV, and it's blowing on a fucking potted plant three-quarters of the time.
I hate oscillate.
Wait, there's no one sitting on the couch with you people?
Swings. I go solo. No, this thing's going around.
Is a joke.
This thing's going 90 degrees or 125 degrees or whatever.
You become so preoccupied with the half a second you're going to get it 10 seconds later, you can't focus on anything else.
Yes, you've cooled the book rack over there.
Yeah, I hate it.
I just pop it, keep it on you. All right. Yes. So that oscillating bottom of the barrel. Fan on you, fine. It's funny. The most ubiquitous one is that big box fan that never has the legs that work and always falls over. So when it's to prop it up, we should work that out. It's 2022.
My method, very, very advanced. That was the college dorm / first apartment with no AC, like the solve to that. You put it in the window at nighttime, blew the cool
window,
air. You get the hanger, the
window,
the wire hanger, stretch it out, loop it through the handle and hook it to the window.
So the two biggest lies
propped
that I can tell on this show that my parents ever told me were, A, my dad said you have to drink milk if you eat peanut butter to activate the protein, and my mom and my mom's no AC because it costs too much in the summer in Kansas in August. We had to put our box fans in our windows and keep all of our bedroom doors open to initiate a cross breeze, which never came.
Theory, correct, but just fucking pay for the AC.
In the window,
single mother.
In the window, better than, you know, oscillating's the bottom of the barrel.
Sorry, she faced it going the other way.
Oh, okay. Your mom.
To push the air out. That's a horrible idea.
Well, hold on. Your mom may have been on to something, even if her execution was weak. Better. So number three is hanging in a window. Mm-hmm. Now, number four, and the best use of a fan is the whole house fan. Now, what's going on inside the house or inside the volleyball court in Irvine is this accumulation of hot air that has nowhere to go. We have an open door, but there's no vacuum, so the air is not rushing in. And we're all just steaming up our own shit here, and then we're just blowing it around. The all home fan, that is in the ceiling, and I'll give you an example.
This might blow your mind, but we have this.
Good. And then there's versions of this. So what it does is the whole house fan you put in the ceiling, you could then duct it to go through the attic and out a vent. Or you could just blow it into the attic, but it's better to get it vented out. Yes. There's also a version where the fan is up in the dormer vent of the attic, and then a duct goes down to just your ceiling. Mm-hmm. But you turn that shit on, and it sucks the hot air that's inside your house that all you've been doing is kicking the hot air from one room to another, back onto your knee, and then back around again. This takes all that hot air and it lifts it and it blows it out. Then you open your window with the screen and you'll feel the cool air, the night air come rushing in. So it creates a vacuum. Like your mom was onto something, except for your mom needed to open. She needed to have another opening. Yeah. So when the vacuum was created, the cold air would get pulled in to your home.
Does this really work?
Yes.
Yeah, it works.
I will prove it.
Is there a version, because we had our AC, our HVAC replaced 4 years ago. Is there a version that's built into our new HVAC machine? Because I don't know that we have the separate fan, but we definitely have the fan function.
No, I don't think there's a version that can
ours
be
is on
built
the roof,
in.
To be disappointing. Fair, to be,
your unit's on the roof. Still, I do not believe there's a version that is worked and incorporated into this. It's a separate unit. But I was thinking to myself, and it's cheap. It's relatively cheap.
Better than running the AC.
Right.
It also costs thousands less to install. Mm. But I was thinking, if this goddamn place had the whole gym fan, you'd put four of them on the ceiling, on the roof. You'd open the doors, you'd fire it up, and you just feel this, all the hot, sticky, sweaty air getting pushed up and out and then replaced vacuum style by the other. And I
remember Word Science when everything got sucked out of the chimney.
Yeah.
Exactly that.
And then Kelly LeBrock shows up in her half tank top.
Yes. I then was done in Irvine, and I went to the other shop where the cars are and the production is. That shop has a large main room. One side is kind of man cave. The other side's kind of car museum. I walked in. It was 102 degrees outside. It was about 4:30 in the afternoon when I walked in. I walked in and I went to one of the air. There's this air zone that's the man cave, and then an air zone that's with the car museum. I walked in and I went to the air zone. I went to the thermostat to turn the air on. And it read 90 degrees. So it was 90 degrees in there. In the next zone, which is the same ceiling height, the same everything. Everything's the same. It's just a big couple of big openings you walk through. You guys know how it mm-hmm. goes. But it's all the same. Mm-hmm. I went there, looked at the thermostat. It said 85. Now, doesn't feel like much, but 5 degrees is a lot, especially between 90 and 85. And that area has a single solar-powered little fan that is the size of about a foot, 14, 16 inches around, just up in the roof. And it just runs off of solar power, and it has a thermostat. You can do ones with a thermostat where when it gets over 90, it kicks mm-hmm. on, or 80 or whatever it is. And all it was doing is just sort of buzzing the whole time. But it was enough to make a 5 degree oh. difference in an area that shared the same basic architecture, mm-hmm. same space. It was just, this one was constantly taking that hottish air.
I believe.
Now, if you had a big one and it was whatever, you could have got it down 10 degrees. And I didn't open a door and have it come rushing
but
in.
I'll happily go walking in 85 degree weather. I won't go in 90. So there's a big difference.
It's a difference, but it could be higher. But this is solar powered.
Nice.
Didn't have to hardwire it. You can get them at the Home Depot. You can just put them up in that attic, and it'll just take a lot of the edge off it. So that's my whole house discussion.
You know.
I was thinking of ways to entertain myself in between volleyball tournaments. At some point, they break for lunch. At some point, they have to become the line judges for other games. You get an hour off.
Oh, the girls do?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You find yourself walking in, and that was such a sauna inside that I kept finding myself walking outside, which was hot, but it was sort of dry heat. But I got myself a water from the vending machine that was just inside of the facility. And then I walked out of the facility with that water, and I was messing around my phone and so on and so forth. And then I started to walk back in, and I saw a big sign. It said, no outside food or drink to be brought into this facility. And I thought, well, I guess this would look like I was bringing water in from outside, but I purchased it inside, and then I walked outside, but it's not provable that I didn't just walk this in. And I thought, is this going to be a thing when I come through the check-in thing? I go, sorry, sir, the water, whatever. And it didn't become a thing, but I decided Larry David should make it a thing.
Yeah.
I
felt this inside, stepped outside.
And the guy going, once you take inside water outside, it becomes outside water. This is inside water. Inside. You're outside.
I don't see
so
receipt,
it makes it outside water. Yeah. Once you take inside water outside.
He points at the uncomfortable teenager. I bought it from him. Yeah. Oh,
yes, I just thought it would be a complete Curb Your Enthusiasm scene of inside water becoming outside water, but it didn't become a scene, thank God. Linda Hamilton is going to join us. I hope you guys have a lot of questions chambered. First, I'll tell you about Simply Safe. Does anything matter more than safety to you and your loved ones? Well, of course not. So, How come so many security companies don't act that way? I trust and recommend SimpliSafe. Great company, great sponsors, been with us for a million years. I use their products. 24/7 professional monitoring. SimpliSafe's agents dispatch police or first responders the moment a threat is detected, even if you're not home or can't be reached. Just a buck a day, no long-term contracts or hidden fees. Two eyes in SimpliSafe, by the way. Customize the perfect system for your home in just a few minutes at simplisafe.com/Adam. Sleek, very sleek design, battery run, do not take up a lot of room. Batteries last up to 10 years. SimpliSafe.com/Adam. Go there today for free indoor security camera, plus 20% off interactive monitoring at SimpliSafe.com/Adam. Linda Hamilton will join us right after this. You own, you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
It's time for Nicaraguan Name That Movie with Adam's buddy Oswaldo. See if you can guess which movie this famous line is from.
I'll be back.
If you said The Terminator,
I'll be back.
You're correct. Now, back to the show.
Linda Hamilton is joining us. You know her from so many movies. Obviously, the whole Terminator franchise, which was groundbreaking. New series out, Resident Evil, second season returns.
Resident Alien, buddy.
Oh, sorry, sorry.
That's a video game.
Blah, blah, blah. Resident Alien, thank you. Sorry for that, Linda. That is going to return tomorrow, as you hear this, on Sci-Fi, and we'll talk about that as well. Nice to see you, Linda Hamilton.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
I'm just going to go all the way to the bottom of your bio, and then we'll make our way back up to the top, because I did about 20 minutes on killer bees coming to California, but no one ever knew was ever stung by a killer bee. But on the bottom of this bio, it says, once attacked by killer bees.
My God.
Stinger removed from under her eye. Let's do that.
Months later.
Wow.
Months later. That stinger just wouldn't come out.
Well, set the table on that story. I'm curious. What happened?
We were in Arizona, in the desert outside of, we were near Scottsdale, I guess. And I was playing a tracker. So we were in the desert for weeks and weeks. And I had just gotten used to bees floating up into my, you know, close up. You know, just totally handled it. But we were getting ready to shoot one scene, and it was the end of the day, and they hadn't vetted the location. It was just they were grabbing an extra shot. And I am a tracker in the desert coming out from an outcropping. So it's just me and my makeup team behind the rock. And my hairdresser is like, what are these? Are these bees or flies? Because he was stepping in something. And I was like, who cares? Just get me ready. I'm like such a tiger. And then a bee came up and stung me. And then more bees came up and stung him. And I got stung twice. And we came. I actually, the first sting, because I'm Linda Hamilton, I was like, I just got stung by a bee. Hurry and roll camera before it shows. Right? Like, I don't need medical attention. I just want to get the shot before you can see that I got stung by a bee. But then more bees come out, and we basically leave around the rock outcropping and bring the bees with us to the entire crew. We were chased down a mountain by these bees. Just totally aggressive. They go for the face. You know, they don't bother with extremities. It's just so we didn't have vehicles there. We were running up and down switchbacks trying to get out of the path of these bees. They followed us into the cars. Like, wow. They are super aggressive.
So they were the killer bees, and you're in the right part of the country for that. Because
they were indeed aggressive. So
and Arizona. It got you right under the eye?
Yes. I got a sting here, and our dear medic... when things were calming down a little bit, the medic kept putting cortisone under my eye. And then 2 minutes later, he'd come back and put cortisone under my eye. And I was like, Mike, I'm fine. Go and handle the people that really need you. Well, it turns out he had been stung 90 times.
Jesus.
The medic.
What? Wow.
Which is why he kept putting cortisone under my eye every 2 minutes. Because he was like out of his mind.
Heal thyself.
Oh, my God.
90 times.
So he's, our medic is the man who went to the hospital.
Well, speaking of tough and grit and intestinal fortitude, watching you in Terminator getting at some point just completely, I don't know if it's complete, but quite a physical transformation. I mean, really getting jacked, like as kind of the first female in a way in our cinematic history to really get buff for a role.
Well, Sarah Connor was kind of a classic damsel in distress, right? In the first one, in the second one, you are the ass kicker. Was that what choice was that amongst the James or you or everyone?
There was a 7-year break in between the first and second movie, so I'd had a lot of time to think. And when Jim came and said, we're going to do another one, I was like, well, if this woman has been living with this certainty of what's coming, she's going to be crazy. Mm-hmm. So make her crazy. He hadn't written the script yet. So he went away and came back a few months later. And indeed, Sarah Connor had gone mad. That was our launch point, you know, like I read the script. I was like, holy shit, I better get ready. You know, I better get myself super strong so I can play this woman and, you know, do everything that is required to bring her to the screen. You know,
do you remember what the regimen
was? I loved the idea of the shock value. You know what I mean? To go from number one to number two and surprise people. For the third one, I kept saying, what if we made her really fat? Like, that would be a shock.
She let it go. Like,
they come back 30 years later and she's just fat.
That's crafty as an actress. I don't want to get buff again. What if I just got fat?
But were you training every day at 6 a.m? Did Stallone come by the house like he did with Travolta? Were you living off of egg whites?
Stallone did not come by since he had nothing to do with the movie. But Arnold and I trained together, not really much before the film, but when we were doing the film. You know, Arnold travels with a truck with equipment, and he was just completely generous in sharing all of his resources.
So how did you do it before that? What was your
before regimen? That? It was 18 hours of working out, 18 to 21 hours of working out a week.
Oh, boy.
We worked out 6 days a week, 2 to 3 hours.
Oh my God.
Guess that's only 18 hours total. But yeah, we worked out about 3 hours a day, 6 days a week.
And I imagine the eating was very restrictive, especially at that time as we change what we know about nutrition and stuff. Can you tell us what you ate?
Oh, my God. Yeah, it was non-fat.
Yeah.
Fat-free. Right. That was just at the leading edge of fat-free.
A lot of spray butter.
So, you know, I could eat an entire Entenmann fat-free cake. Like eventually, because I was burning every calorie.
Right.
It was just nothing could have fat. So it really was chicken and salad. But, you know, anything that was fat free was like on the table.
Fair game.
Where do you hail from?
Yeah.
Did you come out to Hollywood from somewhere?
Yeah, I grew up in Salisbury, Maryland.
Wow.
On the Chesapeake Bay. On the way to Ocean City, Maryland. This is how my hometown is known. It's on the way to Ocean City. And then I trained in New York for 4 years, and then I moved to L.A. So, you know, been a long time since I've been a hometown girl.
I'm going to try to keep it to 500,000 Terminator questions. But speaking of which, at this time, it was relatively earlier in your career when you got cast. You talk about reading, casting, auditioning. What was that process like?
Oh, for the first Terminator? For the first one. Yeah, of course, because then I had the part.
Makes sense.
You know, it went on forever. I think that Arnold even went away and did a film and then came back and we continued the process. Jim Cameron was exacting, but it was also a question of pairing actors that were going to work well together on screen. So
did you have a chemistry test with Michael Biehn?
Yeah. And they put me with other actors too. And then, I mean, it just seems like it went on for months and months and months.
I had always heard that Lance Henriksen was up for the role before, or the Arnold Schwarzenegger role. Did you know that? Did you test with him?
Wow, that's old history, isn't it? I believe that when I got in, Arnold had been cast as the Terminator already.
Okay.
Because my people were super excited, and I remember that.
Do you live full time in New Orleans now?
I do. 7 years.
Wow, I'm curious.
Very
about,
happy
about that. So, Biehn of Kevin and Biehn, K Rock fame, went from L.A. to somewhere outside of Seattle to New Orleans, but he couldn't. He couldn't handle New Orleans. It's been described as a place you visit and party and hang out, but you don't live there. And then he went off to England.
The Schwitz factor alone.
Yes. But I'm curious about how you've embraced New Orleans.
I have never felt more comfortable in any place in the world than I do in New Orleans.
Wow.
In terms of how authentic it is. The people, you know, not about what you do or what you have. It's all about who you are, how good of a neighbor you are. I just am thoroughly engaged with my neighborhood. I walk my dog. There's not a person that I meet that I don't talk to. And the fact that we have hurricane season and have to rely on each other and help each other. Quite, you know, in the last few years, especially quite significantly in the last two hurricane seasons. And it's just, it's monumental of spirit, this town, and just a huge amount of love. And I have found my place.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting how the hurricane, which doesn't sound like something you'd be looking forward to, ends up being a sort of bonding event.
Yes. See, yes. When an event has happened. I mean, I had to flee fires when I lived in Malibu. Right. But that wasn't as much of a community effort. But here we check on each other. We know if they've stayed or if they've gone. Sharing resources. If somebody has a Jenny, they'll heat your heat. That's probably not. They'll put air conditioning, you know, they'll share their Jenny so you can have a little air conditioning. It's just and I think trauma will actually bring a neighborhood together too. You know, you see the damage, you make sure that people have a charging station if you've got power. And somehow that's just really unifying.
I wonder if there's something to age, not your age, but just sort of the age of the place that you're living in. Because I grew up in the San Fernando Valley. It was all built, between 1967 and 1974. And it seemed kind of soulless. It didn't have any history to it. There couldn't have been history. Because it had only been there for 10 minutes.
It was like a planned community.
Right.
And I always thought.
And it used to be Mexico.
Right. I always thought about the fact I had a girl in my Acme comedy troupe. Her name was Katie, and she was from New Orleans. And she would tell ghost stories about she was a kid. She saw a ghost. Then they moved. And then there was another ghost. And then she'd look at me, and I'd go, I'm from North Hollywood. We don't.
Ghosts.
We've not been around long enough. We don't have an old sea
Everyone's
captain.
Still alive.
That guy, yeah, he ran the 7-Eleven of Reseda and he got shot. And he's still haunting the mini mall. Like, we don't have any history. I was like, where are ghosts? And that's, but that, it seems.
They're here.
Yes, it's like, a, it seems weird, but it's a little cultural thing.
Listen, you'll find a real estate thing hanging in the French Quarter, a little sign saying apartment for rent, not haunted.
Really?
Which is exactly what a haunted apartment would
part
say.
Part of the real estate advertising here is not haunted.
Have you had any haunting experiences? Anything you can't quite explain?
I would think my building is actually very, very old. It might date from the late 1700s. It's a storefront that was then converted into a storefront with living quarters. But before that, I believe it was some sort of warehouse. It's a beautiful brick building with, you know, arched windows that have since been brick closed. But it looks like it predates the storefront with living quarters. So it's funky. And it's two buildings, whatever, you don't need to know all the details, but yes, in one side, instead of the guest rooms, my friends call them the ghost rooms.
Wow.
They, more than three people have experienced little, one friend constantly hears the rustling of antebellum skirts.
Oh my God.
So she's sure it's a female. And another friend of mine heard a voice and she knows it's female. So there's somebody over there.
And you're cool with it?
Well, yeah. I'm kind of hurt that they haven't visited me. But my air conditioning went out. This is dangerous in New Orleans when the AC goes out in my bedroom upstairs. So I was going to go. There's a second unit over in the ghost rooms and I was going to sleep there. And I couldn't. I was afraid to sleep in my own guest room.
Sarah Connor's not scared of nothing.
I know. Please don't tell anyone. No, I really was like, you know what? I can sleep on this uncomfortable couch one more night instead of going up into the cool.
So literally,
I didn't want anyone poking me or, you know, doing.
I hear you. Yeah, I get it.
Literally, it says not haunted. On a realtor sign.
He says not haunted.
That's an option on Redfin. You can click that.
Wow.
It's just that, that's also just the history is something that really attracted me and just the beautiful architecture here. I'm living here makes me feel a lot less hungry for Europe.
Right.
I mean, I just love the ancient history and to live in a city that's pre-American. Come on. It's really cool.
I agree. When you go to Europe, you go, oh, look at the architecture and you're put in a different headspace just walking down the street. And it's not like you're buying buildings or using commercial property. You're just there. Yeah, and you're just
in it. And that's how it feels here in many, many places.
So you literally want? Did you go from Malibu to New Orleans? Because that's about.
No, I made a brief 5-year stop at a farm in Virginia.
Okay, so you didn't get the bends.
Close to my parents. I'm a Maryland girl, so I went to. I bought a farm in Northern Virginia. Because I woke up in Malibu one day and went, the only dream of mine that never came true was a horse and a porch, right? You don't get horses and porches in California. So I went and bought a farm and got horses and a porch, lots of porches and
goats
and all of that. And it was while my parents were dying. So I wanted to be close. And my dad was a farm boy and he loved coming to my farm. And sitting on the porch.
It struck me, we have decks, but we don't really have porches. But is a deck a porch that's behind the house? And then a deck?
Very different. Yeah, a porch is usually on the front of the house or around the side. Sometimes you get wraparound porches, and that's like going all the way around.
But if it gets to the back, it becomes farms. A deck.
Well, in front of a back porch.
Yeah, and you don't have farms on the West Coast either. You have ranches.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
But on the East Coast, they're farms.
I feel like there's more good conversations on a porch than there is on a deck.
Yeah.
Deck's a lot of screaming at guys, don't burn it! You're burning it! Right. Good meat.
Flip it!
Flip it, you idiot!
Porches are more communal.
Porches more having discussions about things.
Sipping tea.
Lemonade.
Yeah. Every once in a while, you got to pump the shotgun and yell,
sure.
Get.
Sure.
I mean, it's a porch after all.
When the young suitors come by. So then from... where were you in Malibu? Was that when you were married to Jim?
I was in Malibu for most of my life. Well, I was in Malibu for, I don't know, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I raised my kids, right? Which is weird when you're like from the Eastern Shore of Maryland and like you're raising your kids in Malibu. But I was in Point Doom, which is a pretty wonderful neighborhood.
I know. I agree. I've had discussions with Sean Penn about this and Rob Lowe and maybe Emilio Estevez.
You know, nothing.
Guys who that was just on a Friday
on the porch.
They grew up in Malibu, but they grew up in rural Malibu. They grew up in another Malibu. Yeah. They grew up in 70s Malibu, not $200 million
Bohemian
mega mansions, but riding a horse to like the hitching post and getting on a bus and going down to Santa Monica High and stuff. There's nothing there. You can go down Point Doom and you'll pass Howie Mandel's mega mansion, but on the other side of the street's a ranch from the 60s that a couple of school teachers lived at. Like it's this bizarre, rich and old, and every Point Doom, every third house is a teardown, single story, 2,000 square foot rancher that you might see in the valley. It just happens to be, just happens to have Cher up the street
and
Courtney Cox.
Right.
Yeah. Well, they were good days, but I haven't really missed. I don't look back. You know, it's just like, keep going.
Where do you shoot Resident Alien? Is it Atlanta or where is it?
It's no, not unfortunately. It's very far. Vancouver, Canada.
Oh, boy.
Of course.
So it's a long schlep to get there, like, you know, 11 hours every time I fly there because you can't get there on one flight. So
which is unfortunate.
That's the downside is that I mean, not really a downside, but, you know, I travel far to go to work.
Well, with so many things being shot in Louisiana, I thought you'd get lucky.
I have gotten lucky here. I did the last season of Claws, which literally I could bike to work. It's here on the West Bank of New Orleans, this little studio, and I would bike to work or walk or run if I was late. I mean, it was like the best experience to just work so closely.
That's great.
What's your status? Are you married, boyfriend, girlfriend?
Oh, no, no.
Easy.
No,
I don't know anything.
I am decidedly single.
Decidedly.
Nice. Decidedly single. Yes.
And is that something a you'd decision. Like to just carry on for the rest of eternity?
Yeah. Oh no, I'm not just for one person. I don't do that very well. Horrible wife, by the way. I mean, I just forget to drop everything and make my husband feel good when he comes in the door. And I forget to feed people. I mean, Jim Cameron would come home and go, waffles and wine again, darling, because that's what we would have for dinner, frozen waffles and wine.
Is he a perfectionist who's difficult, or is he different than he appears?
He can certainly be difficult, but perfectionist, no, I wouldn't call him that at all.
Interesting.
Control freak, maybe.
We're saying the same thing.
Yeah, I know. When did being a perfectionist become a bad thing?
You got me, man.
I guess it's when you demand other people around you to be perfect.
To do your best?
Oh, that is one of my sayings.
Oh, that's well said.
Do my best.
Yes,
yeah.
That's well said.
I put it on a t-shirt. Yep. I was so invested in it. So when are you heading out to Montreal? Oh, wait, not Montreal. Vancouver again. Montreal will be a little
closer. I don't think we start up again until January. We just got our pickup. So I have a stretch of time here, which is great. I've been just so occupied with settling this crazy house and then off to do Terminator. And then I just worked a lot, and it's just really nice to have a summer at home with very little on the agenda and no workers coming in and making concrete dust everywhere. It's just, I'm having a lovely summer.
What is a day like for you in New Orleans?
A day?
Yeah, basic every day.
I'm up early. I always am up early. I'm just really happy when it's not the fours. Like if I get up in the fives, I'm happy. But sometimes it's in the fours. I have a huge and very fantastic dog, and so I walk him, feed the animals. Do Wordle, which I just love. And I play Words with Friends. So I love word games. Read a lot.
Oh, boy. Yeah, you and Adam would not be able to spend the day together. He can't do any of that.
He can't do words.
Wordle, reading, Words with Friends.
Has that always been a thing for you where you get up, you just can't sleep in?
As we get older, I think it's a little more. I mean, I cannot sleep in for shit ever. Like even if I go to sleep at 4 a.m, I will be up at 6 or 6:30. I don't sleep in.
Yeah.
So one greets the day.
Yeah. Look, I'm envious of everyone who gets up early. I absolutely am envious of it because I wish. First off, it's always just a better, healthier life. Staying up late, you never do anything good or that's good for you at that hour. It's always about snacks or fatty shit or booze or masturbation or all the stuff God hates. It all takes place after the streetlights come on. So I know it is, but now it is tough when you're the get up at 4:30 person to have brunch with your friends, because you tell your normal friends who have a few cocktails and like to sleep in on a Sunday, what time for brunch? Say 7:15. Yeah. And they're like, I haven't gotten up to take a piss by then.
Do you one better. 9 o'clock.
Do you have a social life out there? Friends, colleagues?
I do, but it's sort of on a smaller level, you know, more neighborhood chums, and I don't do a lot of parties. I don't, I'm a disappointment to a lot of people that live here because I'm not much about the food. I'm a disappointment wherever I go. So I don't really go out to eat a lot unless I have to. I mean, but that will be because I haven't eaten for 3 days. And so I've got to go out.
I don't can't relate to this woman.
I know.
I don't handle food issues very much. Like if it's old shit from the fridge, I would do that much sooner than I would actually go and get some good shit from the the grocery store.
Yeah, well, that's how James Cameron got fucked. Because So let's drill down for just a second on this. So my dad was sort of like you, except for I always say we didn't go and have many steak dinners because my dad didn't care. Yeah. And when the guy's in charge and he's got the wallet, then it's like James Cameron coming home from a 14-hour shoot. You know what I mean? Like, what's to eat? I don't know. Have some Eggos, like, and a box of wine. Like, because if the person you're with is really into sushi, you're going to go out and have sushi a lot. It's the same with going to a movie theater. Yeah. If the person you're with really loves going to a theater, you're going to find yourself doing that a lot. There's a certain percentage of people who just don't really care about food. I bring them up from time to time.
I envy them in a way.
It's an enzyme or a gene or something where they're just like, I'm just not that into it. Is that you?
That's me. I mean, don't get me wrong. I will, like, you know, I could live on cherry pie. I mean, it's not like I don't like, I mean, I could live on cherry pie. It just because I really like cherry pie.
All right.
But do I ever ever say I want to go and have
Hold
a
on. Steak? Someone wrote a song about you in 1988.
So three times I had to do it.
You just so there's many. Most everyone I know gets up and goes, I'm thinking about food because I'm awake.
Right.
And
and
then some people go right in. They just go, I'm going to go eat something shitty right now. And others go, no, no, delayed gratification. Mm-hmm. Get your walk in. Then you can have something nice, you know, carrot dangling at the end of the stick. But you don't have the stick or the carrot. It's just
maybe a carrot.
Eat when you're hungry, you eat literally a carrot.
I barely eat when I'm hungry. I actually really kind of enjoy being sort of empty and the feeling of hunger. Because I just think it's important. I know.
Linda,
it's
you just, are not Jewish.
I am not Jewish. But, you know, the discipline of understanding, I don't mean like on any like huge spiritual level, but I just think it's good to not not immediately address your needs like we do in today's culture to just say, well, let's appreciate this feeling of hunger for a minute or fuck it. I'm going to go to sleep and I'll eat in the morning because there's nothing here.
It's ready for judgment day.
That's right.
You're 100% in the sort of mental aspect of it. Like we do not need to eat nearly as much as we think we do. This whole, like, I have a headache cause I have low blood sugar kind of thing. It's like, no, we're not meant to do this. It's a psychological game. Yes. Go ahead.
And longevity is about leanness too, they say. And I believe that, but, you know, I mean, I'm sure that if I were really hungry, I'd go and eat. I just have, you know, I have gone for instance, the last Terminator movie, for a year and a half, I ate the worst food and I had no carbohydrates. For a year and a half. Okay, so the second movie was fat-free. This one was carbohydrate-free. Yep. So it was just meat and vegetable, meat and vegetable, meat and vegetable. And I hate meat and vegetable. I mean, I just never do I go, oh, good, meat and vegetable. Oh, so, but that was a year and a half of eating food that I didn't like.
What is...
Because you have to do... You have to do it for the job, right? So it's really good to disengage and not have to have really great food because you don't always get to have that, right?
It's probably good that you're not dating because the pitch of let's get up at 4:45 and not eat is not enticing to most fellas.
If you're bored, read.
Yeah. How about you play words with friends? Oh, my God. It's such a blessing to not have... Look, all right, let's put it this way. Let's widen the scope a little bit. In a way, like you hear about all these Kevin Spacey or some of these, even maybe Weinstein, these guys getting into trouble, you know, and they have a yearning. It's like, I want to be with young men or I want to be with underage girls or something. Mm-hmm. And it fucks them up royally. And there's a part of me that wants them locked up. And there's another part of me that feels sorry for them. Like, this is what you want all the time. You'll destroy your life. Or even someone who can't be monogamous. You know, I mean, it's just like this yearning all the time. And all right, you're getting divorced again and your kids hate you and everything else. You could kind of add food into that. There's people that just obsess over it, think about it all the time. And I don't know how much of it is just a DNA and just a sort of nature or nurture or whatever it is, or it's in your bones. But then there's others that's just like, yeah, I could eat or we could just eat tomorrow. And I feel like they're blessed.
Absolutely. I mean, I am a food, you know, I wouldn't say addict, but I definitely have like issues with it. Alcohol, if I never drank it again, I wouldn't notice. Mm. And when I say like, I don't really drink, it's not because I had a drinking problem. It's because alcohol doesn't move the needle for me.
How do you feel about booze? This could be strike three in the end of this interview, Linda. So
I don't drink.
All right. Well, it's called Resident Alien. It's on something whenever. See it or don't. That'll be your choice.
Oh, my.
What the hell do we do all day?
What can we talk about now?
Oh, you read some book with no pictures. La-di-da.
You better take some long strolls and look at a lot of architecture.
I talked to a neighbor. Didn't know who I was.
Got another robot movie coming up.
Awesome.
Well, you have a big dog. At least that's good.
And I love, you know, flora and fauna. I mean, I do notice the birds. And when that Mississippi kite is out there on my walk, I spot it every time. And it's subtropical here. There's always, something's always blooming, always flowers. And I actually live in a world where I get to see that and appreciate it. I know, right. It's completely
no,
simple.
No, it's true. We're all blasting.
It works for me.
No, we're all walking with purpose past all this stuff to get to the restaurant.
Right.
Essentially. So
from meat and veggies.
you're not burdened with look, I don't care about food and I don't care about booze and I don't care if I get laid either. You're home free.
Right. You're a monk.
I
know, it's funny. I'm totally home free. Even things like I would get super bummed out if I would wake up in the morning and there wasn't milk for the coffee, you know, like make the, or a little orange juice. So I gave up milk in my coffee. I didn't want to have my happiness depend on whether there was milk in the morning. I mean, I would be like totally bummed out. And now I drink black coffee and I prefer it.
If you don't
just
write,
like, well, if you need milk, you better give it up.
If you don't write The Way of Linda, you have to write a self-help book for if you can't function because you don't know if there's milk, just stop drinking milk.
Or a diet book with no words.
Then you won't
pages.
Eat it.
It's blank pages.
Very Buddhist.
Blank pages.
Linda Hamilton, Resident Alien is the name of the sci-fi special. Season 2, it's coming out, or series, I should say. Season 2 was...
Season 3 is coming out.
Oh, well, second season comes out tomorrow,
I'm wrong.
Says
the
here.
Second half of season 2 is coming out.
Thank you on
final
sci-fi.
Offer.
Linda, come back and visit us. Tell us all you haven't eaten in that time. And look, more booze and food for us,
That's the answer. The rest of you, enjoy it.
Thank you, Linda. It's been fun. She's fun.
She's awesome.
It is a, to have a kind of catch-as-catch-can relationship with booze or sex or food or whatever is an unburdened life.
Yeah.
God damn it.
There's no hill to climb. There's no obstacles. In a good way.
Yes. All right. Jay Moore is here. First, I'll tell you about Edmunds. Thanks to Edmunds for sponsoring this show. Oh, man. So much going on in the automotive industry these days. It's hard to keep up, and that's why I got to hit up Edmunds. Buying or selling a car can already be a big decision. Environmental sustainability, record gas prices, electric cars. Well, you may be thinking of them, and you may be thinking of them as a new option. For over 50 years, Edmunds has helped people confidently shop and work the market with in-depth reviews, online shopping tools, and expert guidance. These guys get cars, do long-term test drives. They're not in bed with any of the manufacturers. They pay retail for the cars, then they drive them, then they give you a full review on them. Comprehensive articles like their electric vehicle buying guide, honest in-depth reviews from their team of unbiased automotive experts, and much more at Edmunds. Right, Dawson?
If you're considering making a change on the road, Edmunds is here to help. Visit Edmunds.com/appraisal to get your free online appraisal today. That's EDMUNDS.com/appraisal. Edmunds, they drive it like it is.
All right, quick break. One of our favorites, Jay Moore in studio right after this.
All month long, the biggest movies are streaming free on Pluto TV's Popcorn Summer Movies. Watch star-studded blockbusters like Titanic and Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, or fall in love with charming rom-coms like Hitch and How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. The best part? Pluto TV is 100% free. No credit cards, not even a sign-up. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies, TV shows, and more. Download the Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in. Watch free.